When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, hey, where you been? Buckeye Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to the post-spring game Buckeye Talk here on the weekend. Doug Lemerice, Nathan Baird, Stephen Means. Stephen and Nathan back from Ohio Stadium. Me on my couch eating sour Skittles. And we're going to talk about what happened in the Ohio State spring game. We each focused on an area. It's hard to watch a lot of stuff at once. Especially it's hard to watch stuff and write stuff down. Even though they should have a class in that in journalism school, the watch stuff and write stuff down class, hard to do out of practice. So Nathan watched the quarterbacks. Steven watched the rest of the offense and I watched the defense. So we'll run through the podcast like that. And so Nathan, I guess we'll begin with the idea that you have declared CJ Stroud the starting quarterback for the Ohio State Buckeyes. Ryan Day has not, but I actually didn't have time to read your story, but I did see the headline, and I believe the headline was, I declare CJ Stroud Ohio State starting quarterback. Why?
The actual headline was more like, why the spring game showed that CJ Stroud is leading the quarterback battle. And I think we all knew that coming in, or we thought that coming in, right? This is all about trying to gather more data that either affirms or disputes what we believe. And we thought CJ Stroud ended last season ahead of Jack Miller. We thought CJ Stroud started the spring in the best position to end up being the starter. And I thought today with his performance, there's enough. He just looked the crispest. Is that a word? He looked the most crisp. He looked the most sharp. I thought there was a poise there. And also I thought there were just fewer mistakes from him. And it's an accumulation of the day. For Ryan Day, it's obviously an accumulation of a lot more than that. And he's still cautioning about that, saying, hey, it's not just what you saw today. It's all this whole time. But enough things have accumulated this spring to let us know that this isn't an equal 33% share of the lead, that clearly CJ Stroud is the guy who would need to get beaten out from this point to not be the starting quarterback on opening day.
Not that it's about stats, but they did have stats. CJ Stroud, 16 of 22, 185 and two touchdowns. Kyle McCord, 12 of 17, 184 and two touchdowns. Jack Miller, 17 of 30, 128 and one touchdown. And I agree with this. Like Nathan, you kind of part of the case is like, he just looks like the starting quarterback. Steven, like, do you agree with that? Just sort of like, well, I don't know. I mean, he just looks like the starting quarterback, whatever that means.
I mean, yeah, if this was Market Down Monday, I'd be saying CJ Stroud was the starting quarterback. And I mean, it's not close between him and Jack Miller based off of what I saw at the spring game and based off of what I saw when we went to practice.
There were some misses. I mean, I think one of the things that we're going to have to keep in mind is, and I think we mentioned before, is Justin Fields hit everything. I mean, especially last year, right? But he just didn't miss. Was it – who had the miss? I guess it was Jack Miller. No, who had the miss to Jackson Smith Najigba early on? Now, Jack Miller had the pick in the
I think
corner
that was
of the
Kyle.
End zone.
He overthrew him, yeah.
So okay, so Jack had the pick where Ryan Watts picked him off, trying to throw to Garrett Wilson in the corner of the end zone. And then there was a play where Jackson Smith Najigba beat Ryan Watts and was open, and Kyle McCord overthrew him in the end zone. And that's just one of those where – you know, that's going to be a hard thing for Ohio State fans to come back around on. I mean, it's not zero, but if you think the last 2 years, the number of times where a play was there to be made, a throw was there to be made, and the guy was open and Justin missed him, I mean, you can probably count it on two hands, maybe on one hand in two seasons. And you could probably count it on two hands today in one spring game, which is something you'll just have to get used to, that even if it's CJ, Nathan, right? I mean, it's still –
if CJ's the best of the bunch, CJ's not at Justin Fields level right now.
No, but you guys can better than I compare this to what happened in the 2019 spring game. I mean, what did Justin Fields look like in the 2019 spring game? Isn't that a better comparison?
I don't know.
Maybe that's saying something.
Yeah, I kind of remember. He was better than what CJ was today, but it's same concept where it was pretty accurate, but when he missed, he missed. It was better than what he was the first time we saw in practice, though, 100%.
Yeah, and I would say, Doug, you're going back to like, well, stats aren't everything, and I think especially spring game stats aren't everything, but I think they do tell a little bit of a story today because they gave us these rosters ahead of time saying, well, here's who's on what team, but it turned out that didn't matter. I kind of wondered if they would do that, how they would split up three ways with two teams, and what they did was just rotate all three guys. So really, everybody got to throw to the same receivers at some point. You would assume, and I didn't chart this that specifically, but you would assume that the play calling – and it felt like the play calling was fairly balanced between what they asked guys to do over the course of the time that they were in the game. So I think at the end of the day, comparing just today, I think those stats do tell you a little bit. And I thought it said something that Stroud and McCord played, I thought, more efficiently today than Miller did. Miller was the one that I thought looked off at times and looked like either whether it was a timing situation or a couple of throws, or I thought maybe in that one that you're talking about, there was another one where I can't remember if it was Jameson Williams or Jackson Smith and Jigba that had a step on a guy and Miller underthrew him. There were a couple of instances like that where I thought maybe his accuracy just wasn't at the same level as the other two guys today.
Terrible talking about it though. Like the post game, it was Ryan Day, Thayer Munford, and Zach Harrison were the post game, and there was just nothing to say. I mean, it's like everybody, I didn't ask a single question because I didn't go, so I didn't want to steal a question, but it was just like, how do you possibly try to get anybody to say anything? And Joshua Perry on the Big Ten Network tried the same thing with Ryan Day after the game, and he just said nothing about it. And I wish there's a chance that we may get some people next week afterward. And this is really one of those where it's a go watch the film kind of thing. But I don't know that we'll get it, Nathan. Like, I don't know that I would love to get sort of a, you know, how did each guy progress? I just don't know that it's going to happen, which just leaves us just going by our eyeballs. This is our biggest eyeball day. So Ryan Day says, well, it's not just this, but then we don't learn much about what we don't see. So we've got to go by this. And then CJ Stroud just looked more like the guy.
And listen, I'm not the reincarnation of Newt Rockne or Vince Lombardi or something. I'm not some kind of football mastermind, but I think anybody who came out today and all they wrote was like, well, Ryan Day still isn't saying who the quarterback is. Well, you haven't told anybody anything. I think it was important to kind of, like you're saying, like, look at what happened today. And even if we're wrong, even if we turn out to be wrong at the end of the day, I don't know how anybody comes out of there today not thinking CJ Stroud's the guy who's in front. And that maybe all the other thing we should talk about is based on today. The other thing that I had kind of said coming to spring was I thought it was very plausible that Kyle McCord could, if not win the job, at least, you know, move his way up and be right there. And I thought he was the second best performance today.
When does he lose his black stripe? Now is extremely important because, I mean, it matters a little bit, but it matters especially with him right now. If he loses his black stripe on Monday, then you're correct, Nathan. And they also think that too, that, yeah, he caught up ground a little bit because now he's on equal footing with the official Buckeye and all that stuff. But it's just, that stuff does matter a little bit. And as long as he has that black stripe on, you can't completely put him in the quarterback starting conversation yet.
But it is an interesting point you make, Nathan, that yes, it's a battle to be number one, but it's also a battle to be number two. And how would you say the battle to be number two matters?
Well, I think it matters in terms of the confidence. It's not so much who is number two. It's the confidence they have in who is number two.
Oh, but don't you think there is a who number two? Because you think, number three is going to be like, what's up, right? Don't you think?
Yeah, okay. I mean, we're talking about two different things there. I think one, it's important in terms of the context of the team. That's where I think it doesn't matter the identity. They just need to have confidence that there are multiple quarterbacks who can play. And I think they thought that going into the spring. They probably thought that coming out of last season. They think that Ryan Day is going to go find a quarterback regardless. But just when you start to have it demonstrated, that's why I tried to ask Thayer Munford about the starter. It's like, is it a thing that you just sort of sense? Or is it like, how does it get demonstrated? I didn't ask a great question, but I was trying to get it like the confidence of the team in whoever wins the job. And I think that applies to number two as well. Like I don't think a team operates very well if they're terrified of what happens if the starter gets hurt although I guess that didn't really apply to 2019, right? I mean, I think Ohio State probably would have been pretty terrified if Justin Fields had gotten hurt, maybe even last season. Now, the other half of it is, yes, if there's a clear number three, I think Ryan Day should probably be even more hesitant to put any indication as to who is two over three than he is as to who is one over two. Because I think they are trying to keep that whole group intact through the fall. And, you know, from talking to people around these quarterbacks, I think they understand that too. Like, they know that, like, well, Ohio State has a vested interest in not tipping its hand, regardless of who is doing well this spring, because it wants to keep that quarterback room full of scholarship quarterbacks. And if one of those guys gets, like, antsy and thinks he's fallen to third this early, he might leave, especially with what we have coming out now, that he can go somewhere else and be immediately eligible.
Steven, I think if we would have had to guess before any of this started, I think maybe we would have guessed in the end it will be Stroud 1, McCord 2, Miller 3, and it feels like that's where we are. Do you think you agree with that, that that's what we would have guessed?
I think so, yeah, just because, I mean, the momentum with Stroud. But the more important thing, the McCord-Miller aspect of it, McCord's a five-star quarterback who just needed to catch up on knowing what the plays are and just being in the system. And it seemed like it was much easier for him to catch up to Jock Miller with that situation, given he had no momentum, than it was C.J. Stroud at that point. So at this point, it probably is C.J. Stroud 1, Kyle McCord 2, and Jack Miller 3, which is probably how Kyle McCord kind of approached this, is let's catch one first, and then let's get to the fall, and then we can really battle this out.
That's actually a really good point. I hadn't really thought about that you can just like take on one guy at a time. That's actually kind of interesting. Maybe he did think of that. I will say also, though, that of the two, like, I feel like saying based on what we saw today, C.J. Stroud is number one is absolutely true. Based on what we saw today, to say that McCord is ahead of Miller, I think might be the bigger jump, just because I don't know that that indication existed before today the way Stroud being the number one overall existed before today.
There's something that was brought up to me that I want to make sure we get to early on the podcast. Did I say Marvison Harrison like five times on a podcast a couple times ago? Someone on Twitter said instead of Marvin Harrison, I said Marvison Harrison like five times. And if that's the case, you guys got to pick me up, man. I'm getting old. I'm old and weird and crazy.
You're not that much older than me. I don't know how many more times I have to say it. You might look a lot older than me, but you're not that much older than me. And sometimes my hearing fails too.
To be fair, with these guys who have three and four syllables in their names, it can happen. I remember, I think when Jameson Williams first got here, I was calling him Jameson Williamson for the longest. So it can happen.
Especially when they have a Williamson. They do. They have some names that are similar that make it hard. So if I called him Marvison Harrison and I made your ears bleed on the last pod, I apologize for that. Because he had a touchdown today. I'm just going to call him Marvin Harry and see if that works.
Call him Marv.
Marv. Hey, that'll be my first question to him when we finally get to talk to him. Can I call you Marv? Okay, it's weird. Like, this makes me nervous. I don't want to do like a 31-minute podcast because that would give me the heebie-jeebies. But Nathan, is there anything else to say? Is there anything else to say about the quarterbacks? Like, I'm not trying to downplay it. Nobody said much of anything. C.J. Stroud looked like the guy. They all played a lot, but none of it was real football. So I don't know. Now, like on the broadcast, and everybody listening to this also listen to the broadcast, which you guys haven't done yet. But there's two points I want to make off of that. One is that, like, James Ornitis, who's a great guy and did a good job as a color guy, as always, was like joking around that, like, everybody's going to come away from this being like, okay, that's the starting quarterback, right? That people are going to overreact because it's the nature of the thing. But I don't think we're overreacting. I think we're reacting, Nathan. I don't think, like, we have to trust our eyeballs a little bit, and we sort of know how this goes.
An overreaction, I guess, would be to go put down your mortgage on the fact that C.J. Stroud will start on day one. That would be an overreaction. But it's not an overreaction at all to say the accumulation of everything we've seen says that C.J. Stroud leads this quarterback competition, that Kyle McCord will need to, or Jack Miller, will need to beat out C.J. Stroud now to take this job. I don't think that's crazy to say. It would be like, you know, going into last spring, we all assumed Josh Proctor would be the starting safety, but we knew Marcus Hooker was around, and then Marcus Hooker ends up winning the job. I mean, I think this is a different scenario, obviously, but it's analogous. Like, you know, somebody's in the lead, or somebody is assumed to be in the lead, and based on what we see, we make a call. And the call right now is that C.J. Stroud is the one leading this team.
I wasn't on the beat yet in 2018 when this was happening, but if I'm not mistaken, isn't this the same vibe that they had with Dwayne Haskins and Joe Burrow after the spring game?
Yeah, for sure.
So I don't. That's not overreacting. That's just everybody out, not just the coaching staff, got to see it. Media has seen it, whether it was practicing out, and now fans got their look on it. That's a lot of people. That's not overreacting. That's, we saw CJ Stroud do this today.
But what's interesting there, what's different, is that that was the end of a competition.
Right.
They had already set up that that was going to be the end of a competition. This is still just another juncture in a competition. And now Kyle McCord and Jack Miller get to go out and try to improve over summer based on what they've learned about themselves and the corrections that they've been instructed on this spring, and try to be better when they get back here in August and July.
It is. But at the same time, I mean, that's.
But I'd rather be the guy out in front.
Right. Because all he has to do is keep doing what he's doing.
Also in 2018, maybe they got it wrong. Like, well, the guy they said lost, won the Heisman, was the number one pick in the NFL draft. So.
Man, that's just right, like, that's almost like one of the unanswerable things to some extent.
But to be fair, in 2018, Joe Burrow did not look like that. So
he didn't look nothing like it. There were people who liked Joe Burrow in that competition. It's like the LSU stuff didn't come completely out of nowhere. He looked like a good player. We all knew he could go start for somebody. Mm-hmm. And I think I've mentioned this before. Ohio State does have an interesting history of choosing the wrong quarterback. So, like, it's I don't think that's going to happen here, but it's a nod to the fact that what you think, what you decide at the beginning and what you decide in week five, like, it's not always the same thing. And so, but I think we're united on this, that it's feels like CJ.
Yeah, and this isn't a situation where it's like one guy feels like he might throw 60 touchdown passes in 3 years while the other guy just feels like he's 50. No, it's just CJ just feels like the starting quarterback.
Yeah. So the other thing is Joshua Perry went in pretty hard, and maybe he's done it before. He's, you know, he was just retelling the story from a player's perspective of 2015. And he went not at Urban Meyer, but he didn't hold anything back that he said Urban Meyer waited too long. And he said, you should make that decision by the second week in camp. So the last 2 weeks of preseason, the number one guy can be taking all the number one reps. And that with JT Barrett and Cardale Jones in 2015, he was saying that from the player's perspective, it was the same thing that we saw from the press box and all you guys saw from the stand, which is that they didn't know who the starting quarterback was going to be as they started the first drive at Virginia Tech in the opener. The players still didn't know. And he said that was too long. He said it confused the team. He said a team needs to rally around the quarterback. It didn't give the guy who won it like the number one reps long enough in practice. That went way too long, which I've always thought, but this is a guy who was on the team saying it. So I do think clearly they'd have to have a decision by game week prep, right? The last week before the regular season is not preseason camp anymore. It's just game week prep. So you have to have your starting quarterback by then. How much before that you have to have it, I don't know. Joshua Perry was saying like you want to have it week one or two of the preseason. I mean, maybe you could go all the way through the camp part, and then when it's all right, now here we are in game prep week and this guy's the quarterback. But the way it was today, Nathan, it feels like to me, I don't know that this will be one of those that they have to take all of August to figure it out. This might be more like a week or 10 days, and then they make official what everybody sort of feels like they're leaning toward.
So my first day on the Ohio State beat, my first day joining Buckeye Talk, was the Monday before the Monday leading into the season opener in 2019. So if you were to like make a call on that day again, I think I could understand that. It gives you a full 2 weeks to give a guy all the reps with the ones. But I also want to say just because it's two quarterback competitions doesn't mean it's an apples to apples comparison. There, you were not still so worried about developing young guys the way that they are here. Like there, you had two guys who were both kind of at their place, and it was just a matter of picking between one of the two of them. Here, yes, you have to pick a starter, but it's still you have still so much development time that has to go into all these guys who have, again, still never thrown a real pass in a real game.
And also, that situation was just ridiculously unique. You can't do that again. That doesn't happen where you've got two guys where the argument can be made that they legitimately could have won you a national championship the year before. So because of that, I agree with Josh Perry. In this situation, by week two, you need to know so that because these guys are so inexperienced, they get as many reps as possible going into that Minnesota game.
I think Urban got frozen a little bit by feeling like he owed both those guys a lot, too.
Because
like
they won.
They wouldn't have won it without either of them. Like JT had to fill in for Braxton and did everything they asked. And then Cardale had to fill in for JT and did everything they asked. And if they hadn't had both of them do those things, they wouldn't have won a national title. So I think he didn't want to sort of give, he didn't want to shortchange either kind of like veteran who had given so much to the program. And you know, nobody knows these guys, owes these guys anything. The heck with them. No, nobody cares what CJ Stroud and Jack Miller and Kyle McCord. Doesn't, who cares? I'm kidding. But there is a little bit. It's like they, at that point, like Cardale and JT had both earned it. And then Urban had to pick. Here, somebody's earning it. You know, nobody can assume like, hey, I'm the starting quarterback at Ohio State. What are you talking about? Nobody's in that spot. So I think it actually does make it easier for Ryan Day to make a call. And it won't go till the huddle of the Minnesota game. I don't think we're going to be, we're not going to have Kyle McCord and CJ Stroud and Jack Miller standing there holding hands on the sidelines and Ryan Day playing duck, duck, goose and sending one out on the field. Love duck, duck, goose.
I was just about to say, I was reminded of it recently. I don't know if I was watching something on TV. Man, I used to, that was like my favorite like elementary school game.
Can you not conjure up the feeling in your stomach of as you're sitting there and the person's like two away from you and it's like, yeah. Duck, it's like, am I going to be goose? Duck, am I going to be goose? Goose. And then like me, I'm not great at standing up.
Oh, it's that get off is important. Oh. It's like we're gonna talk about Jack Sawyer in a minute. I bet Jack Sawyer was an incredible duck duck goose player. That get off is huge.
I would. Can you imagine? I would like to see that part of like spring game activities or student day, right? Just have a bunch of the defensive ends play duck duck goose with each other. Can you imagine?
It's a headline. It's a headline. 2 years from now, when Jack Sawyer is a Heisman finalist, we can go, why duck duck goose produced Ohio State's greatest defensive end of all time.
I would like to play duck duck goose with the defensive ends. That would be like a good first person story. I could tell it. False. I could write it from my hospital bed.
You would not.
You would not.
Now I'm going to just now that feels like a thing that we would do. We would have like our artist at Cleveland.com, like draw that. It's like Tyreek Smith and Zach Harrison and Jamonte Jean-Baptiste and Jack Sawyer. And they're all sitting in a circle. And Ryan Day, actually it makes sense for the quarterbacks. Larry Johnson's tapping on the head. Go ahead.
You'd rather play duck, duck, goose than dodgeball with the defensive ends.
Oh, or like Red Rover, come over, whatever. They'd rip my arm from my socket.
No, there's a good question. Would you rather play duck, duck, goose with the defensive ends or dodgeball with the quarterbacks?
We do this in my house. Like we watched Saving Private Ryan on Friday night. And I always say like, I don't want to be in World War II. Like, it just makes me nervous. Like, I don't want to have to do it. And it's a thing that I don't have to do. And I'm very thankful for that. I don't want to play dodgeball with the quarterbacks. Don't make me do it. Okay. That's it for the quarterbacks. We'll come back and talk about other people on the offensive side of the ball, which is what Stephen Means watched on Saturday. Next on Buckeye Talk. Doug Lane, Maurice, Ethan Baird, Stephen Means. We sent on a boatload of texts on Saturday. We hope you guys, some of you guys listening, got them as tech subscribers. If you didn't, you know, I've been pumping it up. Hey, get it for the spring game. Get it for the spring game. Spring game's gone. You can still get it. It's off season, right? Sometimes in June, it's nice to think about Ohio State football when you wouldn't normally do it. So you can try it. 614-350-3315. You send a text there, 14-day free trial. See what happens. Or if you don't want to try the text, that's fine. Keep listening to Buckeye Talk 5 days a week. We're not going anywhere. Cleveland.com/OSU stories. We're not going anywhere, even though spring football's done. There might be interviews this week. There is a draft to preview. We have a bunch of draft stories still to write. And we just have a better vibe. We have a better feel for some things. So that'll let us be more able to write some other analytical pieces about how this team is going to work. And one of the things, Stephen, is the question you asked Ryan Day. Is are they going to throw it to the running backs? Because they threw it to the running backs on Saturday more than they typically do. One-off event or a new part of the offense, Stephen?
Yeah, and I can't wait to rewatch this game to see just how many of them were just check downs and how many of them were actually designed passes that were supposed to go to the running backs. But, yeah, they got involved. Travion Henderson obviously led that way. He had 5 catches. But in total, he Marcus Crowley, Evan Pryor, Steel Chambers, Master T didn't do much, obviously. He's a veteran. 16 targets for 12 catches and 76 yards. I mean, on a day where you're going to throw it a lot because you're trying to showcase these quarterbacks, that's a pretty hefty part of the offense. And you got some different style of running backs back there. Obviously, you've got Travion Henderson, who we know is a between-the-tackles guy. And actually, when he bounced outside and got out in space. That's when he was really awesome. But you've also got a guy like Evan Pryor, who is more of a receiving back at this point in his career. And this passing game is ever evolving with Ryan Day since he's gotten here, whether it was with JT Barrett or you saw this, or then with Dwayne Haskins, you saw a lot of the crossing routes. You saw a lot of the out routes and the play action deep balls with Justin Fields. If this is the next stage of that, where you've got a quarterback, where you've also got some wide receivers who are threats out of the backfield more than just being a check down. That's an interesting thing that defenses have to game plan for. Now, I am interested. Yes, is this just something they wanted to showcase in a spring game or when we get to the actual season? You know, is the third down running back now a real thing, basically?
No, that's not a real thing.
I'm not like a guy who only plays on, but you know, just somebody who is a threat out of the backfield to be a receiver.
Okay, then say that. It's not a third down back, but I do think it's not a real thing because one of them is they didn't. There's no tackling. So this was a good way to get the running backs involved because it's like, all right, what are you going to do? Like run through a hole and you're not allowed to get tackled? Like it's sort of like it's not a running back's day. So if they want to be, they want to do anything, you've got to throw it to them. Also, I do think it's check downs. Like check downs make sense. It's like, hey, young quarterback, just check it down. Just check it down. You know who didn't want to check it down that much? If Justin's going to like, it's like, listen, man, if somebody's going to have the ball within like 2 yards of the line of scrimmage, it's going to be me. It's going to be me waiting for a play to develop. Or I'm just going to run, right? That I don't know that, but it could be a very good outlet for the young quarterback to just have that be a thing. They trust the running backs. Maybe you believe in Thayer Munford and Nicholas Petitfrère in this line so much. You feel like, well, you know, I mean, you keep that running back in for pass pro initially, and then he can leak out and be that check down. But also, I mean, frankly, Olave, Wilson, Rucker, Smith, the Jigba. It's like, you're going to dial up a little swing pass for Master Teague? No, you're not. Like, it's not, it doesn't. So I'm curious as an outlet. I'm curious as a thing that Ryan Day wants these young quarterbacks to believe in and know is there, and that they want to drill the running back so that they, when they swing it to him on a check down, they don't drop it. And then you get these guys in space and let them do a little something. But, yeah, I don't think it's a long-term fix. I think it was mostly letting the running backs get involved a little bit. But what did you think, Steven, overall? So Master Teague actually didn't play, right? I mean, he didn't take the field.
He warmed up, which I thought was noticeable because he had been missing from some practices. Yeah. But no, he didn't play.
So Mayan Williams took the field, Travion Henderson took the field, Evan Pryor took the field, Steel Chambers took the field, Marcus Crowley took the field. Who popped? Steven, was there, as you watched the offense, did you think that there was a running back who had the best day, or were there a bunch of them?
I think mine was okay. I don't think anybody was good at reading holes today, but it's also kind of hard when, like you said, they can't tackle. So even if the hole is small, there's not an opportunity for somebody to just blast through and show their power a little bit. I thought, as I said, when Travion popped outside and was able to cut up field, J.K. Dobbins-ish. Just a little bit. And I know that's probably a hyperbolic thing to say right now, but I mean, if that's who we're going to compare him to, that's who we're going to compare him to. And once he got out in space and was able to show some things, that's when he started popping. Steel Chambers had one really solid run. I think Evan Pryor is still, as you can see, developing as a between the tackles type of a running back. But right now, we're talking about this. It's Master Teague and Travion Henderson show. And right as of Saturday, I still think that's what it is.
Nathan, as we decided that your competition might be over, we'll make it exciting, but it might be over. Is it possible that actually the most interesting competition in August will be the running back competition? Because we don't have as clear of a view, and the guys involved, there are more different kind of guys. There's the veteran. There's like the veteran who's established but maybe doesn't have the ceiling. There's a couple other veteran-esque dudes who have been hurt and are trying to hang on. There's the two stud freshmen. And then there's like the bowling ball guy out of nowhere that everyone kind of loves a little bit. Like it's a wider cast of characters, right? It's sort of like the quarterback, or they're all like three leading men. I don't think you wouldn't write a pilot where you had like the three characters be Kyle McCord, Jack Miller, and CJ Stroud, because they're all too similar. Right. It's like it's three leading men. It's not that interesting. This is more like, you know, Mayan Williams can be the wacky neighbor, you know, and Steel Chambers can be the guy down the street who comes over to visit. And like Master Teague, he's like he's like a serious guy. And Travion Henderson's making jokes. Like there's a greater variety that I think it might be like harder to figure out in a good way because as much as we all kind of are all on board with Trevion Henderson, that's possible that we're wrong on that, because you could just go with experience at least early on, and at quarterback, you don't have that.
Well, yeah, but also I don't feel the same urgency. I don't think that Ryan Day probably feels the same urgency to pick the starting running back the way you do to pick the starting quarterback. It's a very different scenario to me. I think you can make a mistake, quote unquote mistake, in this case, it might be that the mistake is that you err on the side of experience over the flashy young guy for the first carries or whatever. Not, you know, that being a, if you want to even call that a mistake, you can make that, and it doesn't really necessarily kill your chances to win any one game the same way that picking the wrong quarterback might have big repercussions. So I think that's the other way that this is a different thing. That I think that gets to happen a little more organically over the course of a season without having that same urgency to really have to pick one guy and go with him.
I agree with that, because even when the running game has been wacky at times over the past 3 years, it was never the reason why they lost a football game.
Now I'm trying to think, but yeah, I guess that's true.
In 2018, it was a defense that had nothing to do with the fact that J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber couldn't run it.
I mean, they couldn't run it, though, but you're right. Yeah, you're right. I mean, 2016 was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Thank God for Curtis Samuel that he might have been in trouble. They wouldn't have won the Michigan game if they just actually relied on their actual tailbacks. Okay. Mitch Rossi. I can actually do that, but like they threw him the ball like four times, didn't they?
It was a long wheel route down the sideline. I love the wheel route, by the way. I hope they do that twice in the series.
They gave Mitch Rossi all of Jeremy Ruckert's like feature plays, just because Jeremy Ruckert was not there. Because they actually lined Jeremy Ruckert up as a fullback a couple snaps last year. So I think that we just saw the Jeremy Ruckert series. And Ruckert didn't going to get that. He didn't play much. I don't even think he played at all.
Did he play at all? I don't know. I don't remember.
I didn't notice him.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure that was a Jeremy Ruckert series, but since it's the spring game, Mitch Rossi just gets the target.
Okay. Receivers, can we just reset for the good people? We've got Garrett Wilson at X, Chris Olave at Z, and Jaxon Smith-Njigba in the slot. Mm-hmm. That's the starting group. Based on how guys lined up, who do we think the next group is behind them?
Right now, Jameson Williams is the Z, Marvin Harrison is X, and Mecca Buka is the slot. I think by the time we get to the season with a healthy Julian, it's Marvin Harrison is the X, Julian Fleming's the Z, and Mecca Buka's the slot. Because nothing Jameson Williams did today was impressive on a day when every wide receiver seemed to be doing something impressive.
Did Fleming play today?
No, he did. He played like two snaps beginning.
He was going to be limited at best because he's been limited the whole spring.
Okay. And we saw a little bit of stuff. We saw a slot fade touchdown to Jaxon Smith-Njigba, where Kyle McCord dropped it right in the bucket and Jaxon Smith-Njigba made a great catch. And Cam Martinez, who we'll get to when we talk about the defense, had good coverage and it didn't matter. And Jaxon Smith-Njigba did it. We saw Garrett Wilson win down the middle of the field, which is going to happen again. We saw Chris Olave catch one of those little rollout, little out passes in the end zone that they throw 10 times a year and nobody ever stops it. We got a little taste. I think, Steven, your headline was these receivers are the best pass catchers in the history of football. I said, we went hard with the headlines on. I wrote that Jack Sawyer is going to come to your house and punch you in the face. So that was my headline. But like, it was what we thought it was, which is a bunch of dudes who can do it at that receiver position.
Yeah, it's obviously Garrett and Chris start everything. And if you want to say that those two will have 60 catches next year, you can say that. But if they don't, if they went back to a six-man receiver rotation, it would be just as dominant as if they just gave the ball to Garrett and Chris the entire time. Just, you knew it was a bunch of top 100 guys, but just to see it, they made the quarterbacks look good today, and they're going to do that a lot next season.
Marvin Harrison scored on a nice little slant. Just looked like a pro. Easy, easy cheesy. Just like, hey, that's what I do, except he had never done it before in Ohio State uniform. And we saw him do it. And we did. We talked a lot on the receiver podcast, which we just did, about like the receivers making the quarterbacks right. I don't remember Steven or Nathan, was it McCord or Miller? Somebody threw a ball behind Olave on a little crossing route that Miller. He was wide open. He beat Denzel Burke off the line, was wide open, and the pass was behind Olave. It was kind of like up at his back ear, and mm-hmm. he tried to catch it, and he couldn't. And it was like if you hit him in the chest, it's a 25-yard gain, and he Miller. Couldn't. It was Miller, yep. and he couldn't quite make the catch. And it's like, okay, there might be more of those in the season, and you're going to have to make catches. I'm not blaming Chris Olave. It wasn't a great ball, but you're going to have to make catches when the ball is not right there. Emeka Egbuka, Steven, had a catch where he just did one of those where he snatched it out of the air in a way that's like, oh, that's why he's the number one receiver recruit in the country. Because when you have those snatch hands like that, that's always like, okay, not everybody can do that.
That's a Stroud, receiver. And that kept alive a touchdown drive. So one of the things that he'll get credit for, Stroud gets credit at the end of the day for leading those two touchdown drives in the first half. It might not have happened if true freshman doesn't make the catch that he made there. But I do want to point out, like going back to the Miller throw that you were talking about, like not to jump off the receivers, but that's part of evaluating the quarterbacks too. Because even if Chris Olave makes that catch, in Ryan Day's mind, that's probably a negative for Jack Miller on that throw.
Bad rep.
Yeah, I think I brought that up. If he's at Elite 11, that'd be a one because the receiver had to do a lot of work. So with the one Stroud through the Buka, but that's right there why he's in the slot, because that snatch and tuck and go, if that was a perfect ball, he snatched that in and it's another 7-8 yards down the field. That's why he's in the slot.
Jackson Smith-Njigba is going to win some matchups in there. Like you could see it. Slot fade still in the book. Such a devastating route. He's just really comfortable, but I liked it because there were some, and we'll get to the defense soon. Ohio State has some slot corners, and there are some fun matchups. There was some fun Cam Martinez, Jackson Smith-Njigba stuff, and I think there was some fun Lathan Ransom, Emeka Egbuka stuff when they're going 12 on 12 because they're both number 12. And it was just like, I would watch this. If you just said, hey, you want to pay like $20 and just come out and watch them run like 100 routes? It'll be Martinez versus Smith-Njigba on one side and Ransom versus Egbuka on the other side. I'd be like, yeah, I'll pay. Like, are the concession stands open? And like, if I need to go to the bathroom, I can go to the bathroom. Like, it's a full thing, but like $20, like pay-per-view. That, how about that? Name, image, and likeness. What if you could do some 7-on-7 pay-per-view in the summer? I'm paying for that. We want to set up a production company for that? What do we think? I mean, they could do whatever they want. If they get name, image, and likeness, they can do whatever they want. Buckeye Talk Productions presents 12 versus 12, Ransom versus Egbuka. $25 pay-per-view. It'll be like on our cell phone. It won't be great production value, but that doesn't matter. Forget this.
I think we could probably invest in a camera.
That's taken out of the bottom line, though, man. That's my pocket money. Yeah, I don't
spend
want
money
buy a
to make money.
No. Make money to make money. Thanks to HelloFresh for sponsoring. I don't know if they're still doing it or not, but we're done here. We're just going to go. HelloFresh presents Egbuka versus Ransom, Watts versus Wilson. And we'll just all day. They don't even have to play football anymore. Just run routes against each other. I swore I would watch that. All right. So Steven, the receivers are good, right? I mean, it's going to be, again, we know who the starters are. It will be interesting to see who the twos are, how much the twos play, how much they demand to play, right? How they work that. There is some intrigue left at that position, even though we all know who are going to be the three guys to take the first snap.
Yeah, it's less about, I mean, we know that. It's how many people are actually going to get legitimate snaps. And if there's a rotation, where's the rotation? Now, if you had to guess right now, if there was a chance for anybody to rotate, it'd be Emeka, just because Garrett and Chris are just, there's a gap in between what those two are, what Jackson Smith-Njigba is as the three right now. But we'll see. We'll see if they get anywhere close to that six-man rotation or not.
Offensive line, Nicholas Petit-Frere didn't play. Harry Miller didn't play. Thayer Munford was Thayer Munford. Matthew Jones was out there at center. And can we get a confirmation, Nathan? You texted about this. Again, we give the inside information to the people first. Luke, what?
All right, now listen. The pronunciation guide says Whipler. But here's the other problem. Like, I've seen Javonte Jean-Baptiste. I've seen Javonte, they have it on here, like Javonte Jean-Baptiste. Like, I've seen them pronounce that different ways, too. So I think we're going to have to just go straight to Luke Whipler or someone close to him and find out what the answer is, because I don't know if I can trust Ohio State's pronunciation guide at this point.
They need to just give us all the people who have names that have questions on pronunciations one day as an availability. And they just we don't ask them any questions. They just come to the Zoom, they sit down, they say their name, and then they get up and they leave.
You know what is also incredibly helpful for that? If we knew everybody's birthday, because then you always know how old everybody is, which is an incredibly helpful thing, because sometimes you want to be like 20-year-old, right? I mean, like, we don't always have that. Yeah. Sometimes they used to like put that kind of information in the media guides and stuff, and I think they don't do it as much anymore because they know sports writers don't make that much money and they don't want us trying to steal football players' identities. So how do you pronounce your name? What is your height and weight? What's your birthday? What are your parents' names? And like, what do you think of square cut pizza? Like something like that. If we could just have a 2-minute session with every player on the team and run them through like media day, just like that's what media day would be. So I thought the offensive line, I know they brought it up on the broadcast and I'll be honest with some of this stuff. It's like, well, sometimes it's like, oh yeah, they said it in the broadcast. And I say this only because I love James and the other guy was good too. And Joshua is great, but it's like, oh yeah, well, they're just reading what we write. Like not us, but like what the beat writes. It's like, you know, we're providing some of the information because those guys get interviews with people. They're not on every conference call like we are. They did bring up the idea of like, maybe not Harry Miller at center. Like just the idea of like, hey, things happen in the spring and people get opportunities and you never know. And that felt a little bit like a thing that maybe a coach would have said to them in the pregame broadcast prep. And they brought up Whipler. Like, if we think, all right, we don't think Paris Johnson's one of the guards. So now are we entering a territory where it's like, well, if we thought the other two interior spots were Harry Miller and Matthew Jones, is there a chance, you know, maybe with that it's Whipler, that Whipler's right there? Is they just said it. I don't know if they're just speculating or if they got led to that speculation, but I don't know, Steven. I thought it was slightly interesting because I would say offensively, that's probably where we are the least certain at this point, right? That I think right between those three, and that Harry's going to start. Harry Miller's going to start. But like, is it Matthew Jones or is it Luke Whipler? Listen, as we said, Whipler's a freaking top 50 national recruit. That dude might be ready to go. And Matthew Jones is a really highly rated recruit too. But I don't know, Steven. I caught my ear a little bit at least.
Yeah, I think I texted something out. I said, I won't be shocked if Harry Miller just stays at left guard, because he was a starter there last year and he can just continue to develop there. I think Matthew Jones is going to be the center, though. He looked real comfortable out there and it didn't seem like any mishaps. I'm not saying Luke Whipler didn't look good as well. I just think Matthew Jones is the veteran there. He was also a highly rated center, so it's not like it's out of position for him. Snaps were never an issue. Of all the things that we came into this spring game thinking, I don't even think snaps being an issue was ever on anybody's radar, and it ended up being a lot of clean snaps. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's just Thayer Munford, Harry Miller, Matthew Jones, Paris Johnson, and Nicholas Petit-Frere, and Luke Whipler is just the backup center for a year, or maybe just the backup interior lineman, and if they need to plug and play, they just plug him in somewhere.
They gave us a roster with positional designations, and it was more specific than the one that they'd given us early this spring when we had gone to availabilities and practices. And that the things that jumped out to us immediately were like, you know, G. Scott, wide receiver / tight end, and the bullets that we're going to talk about here when we get to the defensive segment. But Matthew Jones is listed as a center. He's not listed as a guard or an offensive lineman. He's listed as a center today. Now, was that about just today's positional designation, or does that tell us more? I mean, Harry Miller also listed as a center, not listed as a guard. He was listed as a center today, even though he didn't play and we didn't think he was going to play. So I know it's definitely, I texted that out before the game too. It's like, hey, is it just something to keep an eye on? Because it was just a week ago that we talked to Greg Strujawa, and he said, like, he assumes Harry Miller ends up being one of their top five, even though he's not playing this spring. So I still kind of think that too. And now it's just a matter of, does it make this offensive line better to have him at left guard and somebody else at center, or does it make this offensive line better to have him at center and one of those other guys, which presumably would just be Matt Jones at that point then, right? Like, I don't know that it would be a Whipler versus Jones to play guard the way it is Whipler versus Jones to play center.
That could be true. That could be true, that Whipler gets more in the mix if Harry Miller is playing guard. That's an interesting way to look at that. I think we all would say Harry Miller's going to start. but there's a little bit of intrigue about which spot and then what happens at the other spot. And that is maybe where there will have some questions to be answered still in August. All right, let's do defensive side of the ball. When we come back, Nathan, you take the wheel because I watch defense. So I'm going to be answering a lot of questions and you can ask me whatever you want. You can chime in. You're allowed to chime in, but I don't even know what the quarterbacks did. I don't know. I just was down here in my basement standing. I have to stand so close to the TV. I almost was going to get my binoculars to watch the TV through binoculars because I'm trying to see what number is that? What number is that? Like, who's the starters? What's going on? So I did it. I did it for you guys with my old man, weak eyeballs. We'll talk about defense next on Buckeye Talk.
All right, we're back on Buckeye Talk. Doug said he did not watch the quarterbacks much today, but if you were watching the quarterbacks today, then one of the things you saw leads right into, I think, the first thing we'll talk about in defense, which is a lot of times they were trying to get away from Jack Sawyer, or Jack Sawyer was on top of them very quickly. Doug, you pointed out a little bit to our tech subscribers. You kind of broke down who some of those pressures and sacks, as such as they were, they weren't tackling today, but who those came against. And I think that's an important context. But I think also the other important context is just how often he was back there in a way that other guys weren't.
So I think he had at least five where he got back there. I think maybe he was credited with three sacks, but he had at least five where he got back there and sort of screwed up the play. And by my count, two of those were against Grant Toutant, second-year guy, lower-rated recruit. One was against Zen Michalski, true freshman. One was against Enoch Vamahi, decently rated recruit, but probably not even a third, probably not a second string tackle, probably a third string tackle for this team. And one was against a walk-on. So it wasn't against Thayer Munford, and it wasn't against Nicholas Petit-Frere, who didn't play, and it wasn't even against DeJuan Jones or Josh Fryer, right? So I think we do need to keep that in mind. And also, I don't know if it should be the same pay-per-view or a separate pay-per-view, but like, just line up Thayer Munford and line up the ends and let them go after him, like Zach Harrison versus Munford. It's like a tag team. Then Zach Harrison tags out. Zach, Jack, Zach attack. They tag back in, and Thayer Munford's like, I'm taking y'all on. Thayer Munford's like Andre the Giant. And he's just by himself. And there's Javonte Jean-Baptiste, and it's Tyreek Smith. And they just keep, because I don't think Thayer Munford's going to let anybody past him the whole year. He did play today. But Jack Sawyer has a get off. Jack Sawyer has speed around the edge. Jack Sawyer knows how to win with his hands to do that initial. He sort of fights off that initial push from the offensive lineman, whether with one hand or two hands, and gets the edge. And then, as Zach Harrison mentioned, or Thayer Munford mentioned, has that bend. That's the bend, right? It's like once you get to the edge, you got to be able to bend it or you're going past the quarterback. That's what makes Myles Garrett great. Myles Garrett might have the best bend in the league. He's got some bend. I thought his get off reminded me of Chase a little bit, that he's just like oftentimes he's moving before anybody else is moving, because he's got the quick twitch stuff, and then he's got the speed. And I just thought to myself, there's no way he's not going to help this team this fall. Even if it's just third down pass rushing, he's too valuable. He's too rare. And I also think he very well may be their third best defensive end by pretty early in the season, because no offense to Javonte Jean-Baptiste. And as a resident French guy, I've always said Jean-Baptiste. Tyler Friday. No offense to those two guys, but I haven't ever seen them do that, even against freshmen or walk-ons. I just haven't.
Well, they didn't maybe, do it today.
Maybe I need to look for it more, but you just don't see it. So I think it's very possible right now, he's the third best defensive end on this team. And I think they're going to try to rein him in a little bit, right? Not put too much on his plate. You've got to let Zach Harrison and Tyreek Smith do their thing because they've earned that. But I think Jack Sawyer has a role for the fall based on what he looked like today and the way everybody talked about him today. And I actually think it is a fairly significant role. I think he's going to play a decent amount this September and October.
So I watched two snaps where I just was also watching Jack Sawyer because I was watching offensive linemen. And I saw what I asked Larry about a week ago, and the idea of these Ohio guys getting a chance to get on campus a lot more, and just they come to Columbus, they get on campus, and they've already got the technique down once they get here as actual student athletes. And the one he had against Zen Michalski, I don't think I've seen a true freshman bull rush like that. That's a guy who's been working with Larry Johnson the past three summers and doing nothing but better with his free time. That's he's advanced in a way that maybe some other five stars weren't, just because of how often he was able to get on campus. So I saw that one, and I saw the one against the walk-on where that was just straight get off and him being a better athlete. But that bull rush specifically, I don't think I've ever seen a true freshman do that.
He also had a move where on one of the pseudo sacks that he got, the next play he made an inside move and he beat the tackle inside and the guard was waiting for him. And it's like, oh, they're double teaming the freshman in the spring game. It was like, that's where we are. They're double teaming the freshman in the spring game. And it's like, okay, that's a thing. So that's just where he's special.
And I double teaming the freshman in the spring game who hasn't played football in 2 years and was playing mostly quarterback in 2019.
I think that it's important, again, that context bringing up who he had those against. But let's not forget, like, Enoch Vamahi would start probably at guard, not at tackle, for a lot of Big Ten teams. Grant Tutant might even be starting for a lot of Big Ten teams. So he wasn't, you know, it's not a comparison for, like, what he'd be doing in a playoff game right now, but it's a comparison of what he might be doing against the bulk of this schedule.
There are, I'd probably say, maybe half the starting tackles in the Big Ten have trouble moving their feet. And if you are a tackle who has trouble moving his feet, Jack Sawyer's by it. So, like, and that's not true of everybody. So that's just, that was true of Chase Young. And our friend Wes K on the text said he reminded him of Will Smith. And it makes me want to go watch some Will Smith film from back in the day, the late great Will Smith. So, like, we know there's a litany of defensive ends here, but, you know, this is one of those, we see it when it happens. And this is going to be one of those when he's like an All-American as a sophomore or as a junior. We're going to talk about, you know, Jack, remember, did you feel like you showed people right away in your first spring game what kind of player you were going to be, you know? And we're going to be talking about this because it's the start of something. We all knew it, but again, it's like, that's why we watch. We can assume it, but, like, it was absolute confirmation. He's different, man. And Zach Harrison looked good today, right? I mean, they've got guys. He doesn't have to come be a savior, but, man, if we thought he was fifth in a rotation, I don't see how he's fifth. Like, how's that guy fifth? So I think he's third.
I want to talk about – so linebackers were pretty thinned out, unfortunately, today. There was a lot of, like, people tweeting that from the beat today, and I kind of wanted to sneak in there and say, like, yeah, but let's not forget that, like, there's guys who are going to be essentially playing linebackers who aren't warming up as linebackers, but it's the bullet. Like, it was – like we already said, it was on the roster in a way that it's never been on the roster before. You had guys who were marked down as the bullet. And those guys were the base defense today. Those guys were the Sam linebacker in the base defense today. So, Doug, I didn't get to watch it that closely. I'm really eager to go back and look at the film, the record. I guess not film, YouTube. But, Doug, what did you see from that group today?
So the thing that I thought was so interesting is Craig Young was the bullet for one team, and Ronnie Hickman was the bullet for the other team, which is how they both were listed on the roster. And the thing that intrigues me is they're so different. Ronnie Hickman's a safety, and he's safety sized. Like, he looks like a safety. He is 6'1", 205. And Craig Young is a linebacker who now runs with the safeties, but Craig Young is 6'3", 228. So it is two completely different body types doing the same thing. And it's run, cover, hit, tackle, like, do everything. And I don't want to be too definitive. Now, listen, if they play Wisconsin, if they play Iowa, if they play a team that plays two tight ends a lot, if they play a team that runs the ball a lot, they're going to have a third linebacker on the field. But against a typical offense, against Ohio State's offense that has three receivers on the field, this is the base defense. It's two linebackers, the bullet, three corners, and a single deep safety. That's what they were in every single snap. So, like, Dallas Gant and Taraja Mitchell and Cody Simon and Mitchell Melton and Kayvon Pope and everybody else, you are fighting for two spots, not three. Like, that's official. And it's different dudes asked to do slightly different things, but I'm intrigued by both. They both seemed very comfortable there. And I know this is silly, and I've told the story of, like, don't, you know, when sports editors tell you don't compare young guys to all-time greats, it's not silly and whatever, but when we had the Isaiah Simmons discussion a couple years ago when Ohio State played Clemson, and it's like, when you have a guy who's just like a big freaking guy who can run all over the place and just do stuff, and, like, he doesn't have a position, that's the Craig Young vibe. Craig Young looks like they made Zach Harrison a cornerback. You know what I mean? Like he's – and he covered that wheel route, and he ran – and was, you know, he's waiting with a walk-on. But he ran with him right down the sideline, and the ball was in the air, and the guy looked for the ball, and Craig Young had his back to the ball, and he raised his hand up, and he punched it like a volleyball set. And it went like 20 yards in the air, and it was like, that just looks like a guy who's good at football. So, like, the Craig Young alert is on, and then that's where Court Williams will be. So if we have all, you know, these 3 years, we've said, what's a bullet? Who's a bullet? What does it mean? How do they play? What are they supposed to do? What's the designation? I think they have three bullets now. Craig Young, Court Williams, and Ronnie Hickman. I think they're all good football players, and I think they're all going to play, and we – this was it. Now we know what it is. It's the great answer. We got it answered, Nathan.
Yeah, and did Williams play much? I wasn't necessarily –
I don't think he played. I don't think he played.
He warmed up. He stretched out. I didn't think that he played. But what is fascinating to me, again, is that range of body type. And that, again, to me, tells me something kind of what we've been saying all along, that it isn't necessarily about developing a linebacker for that spot. It's about just developing an athlete for that spot. And that athlete, I mean, Al Washington kind of said it early in the spring, was that, like, you know, what are you guys doing at Sam? And because you've gone from Pete Werner to Baron Browning, who I guess look similar to each other some ways body type wise, but seem like such different linebackers. Like, so what does that lead to you guys doing this spring? And he said, hey, whoever we pick will decide what we do this spring. Like, somebody will answer that for us. Somebody will kind of determine that they have to be on the field. And I think we're starting to see that a little bit with Craig Young.
Isaiah Simmons is 6'4", 238. Craig Young's listed at 6'3", 228. He's just a big guy running around, which just catches your eye. If he knows what he's doing, and it looked like today, like he knew what he was doing. He's the kind of guy that, like, he's floating around a little bit, I think would make a quarterback a little bit nervous. So that's what they're going to have when they have this base in the slot corner, covering the slot receiver. The bullet's going to cover the tight ends a lot, right? Maybe cover back out of the backfield. So you have to have that coverage responsibility sort of primarily, but then you also have to come up. And they line up. You can see them when they line up. The two linebackers are in the box, bent low. I love when the linebackers get in their stance. Cody Simon looks good in his linebacker stance. That's how I evaluate football players. It's like, oh, he can stand. But then that bullet is like a setback a couple yards, right? But it's not. It's just outside the box, but you've got some stuff. You've got, especially on any wide runs, right? You've got to come up and help. You've got to be able to come up and hit. It's not a coverage spot. It's a partial coverage spot. You've got to be able to come up and help against the run and make some plays, short throws in the flat and that kind of thing. And I felt like Ronnie Hickman and Craig Young both looked very comfortable doing it.
And from a recruiting aspect, I mean, TJ Hicks and Deshaun McCullough were both there today. I mean, they just saw their position. And they saw the two sides of it. TJ Hicks can watch Ronnie Hickman do it, and Deshaun McCullough, who's 6'5", 220, can watch Craig Young do it. And either way, it can be successful. Because I forgot the bullet was a thing for a second, because Ronnie Hickman was on Cade Stover on one of his targets, and he covered it pretty well. And I went, Ronnie Hickman is on a tight end right now. And Nathan goes, yeah, he's the bullet. And I go, oh, yeah, that is a thing. I forgot all about that.
But yeah, that's what he's supposed to do.
That's what he's supposed to be doing.
Literally, like, one of his primary jobs. Now, though, it wasn't in the past, but now. And I think it is interesting. And I had put out on text the other day before the roster came out, like, Ronnie Hickman was, like, one of my, like, next tier down guys. Like, what is he going to be this year? Because he flashed a little bit last year, but we didn't really know what his role was going to be. Was he just going to be still buried in a depth way? And now we see that, like, this is a new way to get an interesting defensive player on the field. Doug, you liked what you saw from the slot corners. Marcus Williamson dressed today, but during warmups was just holding his helmet and never warmed up. And as far as I could tell, didn't actually play. But what did you like about the other guys?
Lathan Ransom. And we've answered Lathan Ransom, like Lathan Ransom, the slot corner. He might be listed as a safety, but like he's playing slot corner. I don't know what he's listed as. And Cam Martinez is the guy that everybody was talking about this spring. He got beat on that touchdown by Jackson Smith Njigba, but he played really good coverage. You know, and it's like, I think Landis tweeted, it's like, maybe he could have gotten his head around a little bit, but like, that's hard. I mean, he was right there. He looks comfortable in space. He can turn and run with the guy. I mean, he really read the route really well on one of the plays. I think he had, they were in zone on one of the plays and he was in the slot. I'll give a credit. It was either Martinez or Ransom. It's like, he's on the guy in the slot, but they're in zone. He drops off. the linebacker comes out and takes the guy in the slot, and then the slot corner just goes out in the flat, and you're right underneath the outside throw to the outside receiver. It actually might have been Ransom. You got your hand on the ball. But I thought Lathan Ransom and Cam Martinez looked athletic and comfortable. And I don't want to be dismissive of Marcus Williamson, but I thought they both looked like they can give you more than what Ohio State got from the slot corner last year. And I am not going to be dismissive of Marcus Williamson, but they didn't miss him on Saturday. And they're both second year guys, and they both looked ready.
I think that's important, though. I think even if Marcus Williamson is as good or better than he was last year, I think you got in a situation last year when he or someone else struggled, it was just palms up behind them. Like, I don't think they really, I kind of believe there's sincerity in the coaching staff standpoint of like, we didn't really think that there was someone else that we had proven that they were ready to play. And then Cam Brown got hurt, that complicated things too. But now I think it's more just like having like actual options, having like demonstrable options now, and that it's just spring, but it's still important that you've seen these guys emerge, I think, this spring and start to actually be real options rather than just like theoretical options if they got the chance. Like, now they're getting a chance, and this is only brief looks that we're getting, but like you're saying, like, it's real. Like, they're showing, they're making plays, they're doing real things.
So from a hypothetical standpoint, when they do go nickel, and they put that second safety, I mean, you watched the defensive backs today. I didn't, but can you just call Lathan Ransom a slot corner? But can we see a situation where Lathan's the second safety and Cam Martinez is the slot?
But that's dime then. Like, that's, you mean like if they have two deep safeties?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because like the only two guys who played deep, that three guys who played deep safety today were Josh Proctor, Bryson Shaw, and Jansen Dunn.
Okay.
So those are the three deep safeties. And like, if they do go to a look, which I didn't see, maybe I missed it, but I didn't see a two deep safety look. Now, again, sometimes you line up a guy and then right before the snap, you drop off or whatever. Mm-hmm. But to have a second guy lined up deep, I did not see it. And again, that gets a little bit into me. It's like, well, are we going to ask a guy who's normally up sort of playing man coverage on a guy to now he's going to go back and be a second deep safety, or just put, if we have two deep safeties, we have guys who play deep safety. I don't know, but also they didn't do it at all. So, but also if they go to that look, I mean, I guess you could go to that look if you take the bullet off the field and you really, like, again, if you're playing Bryce Young in the national championship game and you feel like you need to do that, I guess you could.
Or maybe it's the bullet and just, or maybe it's just the bullet's the second linebacker at that point.
I guess now you're putting six DBs on the field, and then is Bama going to ram it down your throat? Like, that's the whole dance of this. But you also, I don't think you put Craig Young back as the second deep safety, right? I don't know.
So it's the fact that he's been in both rooms, and I think Nathan Gray said the same thing I'm saying. Since Craig Young has a linebacker body, that's the type of game where he just becomes the second linebacker, and you don't necessarily lose all the benefits that the bullet gives you, which is why you want multiple body types at that spot.
It's exactly what I was going to say, that maybe that, I mean, that's almost like the theory of it, that if he's enough of a linebacker that he could be that second linebacker in those situations. And as with Pete Werner, as with Baron Browning, you're not necessarily losing a lot from a run stopping standpoint or whatever. Ryan Watts with an interception today. And I need to go back and look at that play again, because I couldn't tell if it was a miscommunication with Garrett Wilson, but it was definitely a pass thrown behind Garrett Wilson. But they've got to find more guys on the outside to play corner once Seven Banks and Cam Brown are healthy. And Ryan Watts and Legic Avazos, both, we've been hearing good things about them all spring. And it was, from an Ohio State fan standpoint, it had to probably be a little bit of a confidence builder to see somebody like that make a play.
I don't know if I saw Legend today. I don't want to say that
definitely
wrong.
Warming up. I didn't see him. I
didn't
remember
make note. I know that on the one team, the two outside corners who were together were Ryan Watts and Tyreek Johnson. Like, hey, Tyreek Johnson reminding us not to forget about him. But on that play, it was just a throw to the pylon, right? One of those outs where you throw it to the pylon, and Ryan Watts just sort of read the play, got turned around, and it wasn't a great ball. I think the timing was off a little bit, but Ryan Watts played it well. And I thought Ryan Watts came back and got beat by Jackson Smith Ajigba on the throw that they missed in the end zone. But I thought Ryan Watts looked the part today. And then I think the corners, I think on the other side were Denzel Burke, true freshman, and DeMario McCall, who unfortunately got hung out to dry in a deep ball to Chris Olave. And it was like, what was that play? Was that like an NFL receiver against a guy who's never played cornerback before? And it was like, yes, that's exactly what that was. So DeMario is trying, but when you think about the outside corners, I know if you're one of those, listen, we get it. DeMario, we'd love DeMario, but Seven Banks, Cam Brown didn't play today. Legend Cavazos is in that mix, but Tyreek Johnson and Ryan Watts and Denzel Burke all did play. That's six. I don't think DeMario is more than your seventh corner. So like, if you were all excited to see DeMario McCall at cornerback, that I think is just the reality, but they had to have someone play corner today. And listen, this guy's a top 50 national recruit who in his sixth year of college football is changing sides of the ball. Awesome. All best of luck, but that's not how you win a national championship, by playing a guy doing that. So, but that, I thought Watts showed some things that you want a guy in that position to show. Does it mean he's going to beat out Cam Brown and Seven Banks? I don't know. But I think the whole point you're making here, Nathan, with the secondary is Ransom, Martinez, Watts, maybe Cavazos. They're all guys that a year ago in year one, they just were not comfortable going to them when they had some issues. And I think now it doesn't mean they'll all win starting jobs, but I think they would be comfortable playing them if it came to that. And maybe more than that, maybe a couple of them will win jobs.
Yeah, I think it just makes it more plausible. And it certainly ratchets up the competition going into the fall. Like you were asking before, like what's the most interesting competition? Maybe it actually isn't quarterback. And I think there's still some spots on defense that that lend to some competition. And can one of these young guys beat out someone ahead of them and have a starting job on day one? I don't think it's far-fetched to think that. And I don't think as opposed to last year, I think it would have been potentially a bad signal that if you have a true freshman come in and beat out a veteran, especially under the circumstances of the last year, that might have meant that you just could not trust that veteran at all. This year, I think it would be an indication that these guys have progressed to the point in their careers where they believe that those guys are frontline Big Ten players.
And I don't even think it's necessarily about beating out, especially at the outside corner spot. Seven Banks has one. We know that. But Kerry Combs is Mr. I will rotate guys if we have enough depth there. Why can't it be a situation where if Ryan Watts might not beat out Cam Brown, but they just rotate that one spot and Seven Banks is just the number one corner on the other side?
Completely possible. Absolutely.
Yep. Anything else on defense that we need to touch on?
I thought Teron Vincent had a good snap early, beat the guard and got in the backfield a little bit, you know, win with his hands, explosive off the line, looking for defensive ends playing inside. Noah Potter played inside a lot today. He wears number 97. So you're seeing number 97 at tackle, which is a little.
Can I say one thing about Noah though? He probably did have a great day. I believe you. I just remember I put my binoculars on Paris for a snap just because I wanted to see what he was doing in there. And I just happened to get the right snap where he's going up against Noah Potter. And he just kind of shoved him out the way like Noah Potter wasn't this 280-pound human being. And I'm like, all right, well, I guess the right guard is going to be all right.
Yeah, I mean, Noah Potter's actually 6'6", 280. So it's like, put that guy inside. I don't know. We're always looking for that. I thought Darian Henry Young had some good snaps. Played like some zone reads where I think he like held his ground and like held his position and did what he was supposed to do on the play. So I thought that was good. You know, Antoine Jackson and Jaron Cage and some of those guys got their snaps on the interior of the defensive line. So I just thought that in a world where I think we had some questions about the defense, I don't know what the answers are, but I thought there were a lot of possible answers like out on the field today. And that, it's like, I feel like, okay, between everybody, there's like maybe 15 or 16 guys. If you say these are the guys we're going to roll with for most of the snaps, I would say, okay, I think that's okay. I think that will be better than last year. Some of them are guys just getting better, and some of them are some guys showing up. Some of these second-year guys showing up in a way. And I did think Taraja Mitchell looked pretty good. So if you want that weak side linebacker to flow to the ball and do some stuff, I thought he did that. And based on how he stood, Cody Simon might be giving Dallas Gant a run for his money at middle linebacker in the fall. Just the crouch. Man, I don't even think I could do that for 2 seconds. It's like, Doug, do you want to play linebacker? It's like, because sometimes I go to like the middle school track meets. My daughter's in middle school track. And sometimes there are the track athletes who like in the 200 use the starting blocks, right? And they get down and they put their hands behind the line. And then there are other people at the same race who just kind of standing there. Like, I'll just stand. That would be me. It's like, I'll play linebacker, but I'm not going to stand in the stance before the snap. I'm just going to kind of stand upright, and then a guard would just come to the second level and destroy me. But I thought Cody Simon bends very nicely. So it's hard to tell linebacker play, right? I mean, they couldn't do much. They were right, floating in zone in the middle of the field a lot in the passing game. And then, like, Taraji Mitchell, like, one time flowed to the ball, got right to the hole, and would have tackled Trabion Henderson if he'd been allowed to tackle him. But there wasn't a lot to read from the linebackers.
You know, we've talked to other guys who are playing two positions today. We've gone this far without mentioning Rowan McCullough going between long snapper and linebacker today.
I think it's great. The McCullough legacy lives on, I'm sure. I mean, but also, they're only missing two linebackers, right?
Well, again, it's how many guys are practicing at linebacker, warming up at linebacker, and how many you've got linebackers who are in the safety room, essentially.
No, I know, but it's like they're thin at linebacker. Dallas Gant didn't play and Mitchell Melton didn't play. Nobody else was hurt, are they?
No, it just when they were warming up, it looked kind of crazy that there were as many centers taking snaps as there were linebackers warming up in the moment.
But I mean, they
and again, it just happened. The two guys that they were missing happened to be inside guys.
Yeah.
But I mean, they only have inside guys. They don't have outside guys. I mean, they have guys in the box. Will and Mike are both in the box. I don't know. Like, it's like I get it, but like, it's not, you aren't devastated. Taraji Mitchell played. Craig Young's a bullet. Dallas Gant was hurt. Mitchell Melton's hurt. Reed Carrico played. Cody Simon played. Tommy Eichenberg played. Kayvon Pope played.
Yeah. I thought people were making a little too much of the, before the game, people on Twitter were like, oh my God, this devastation of the linebacker group. And I thought it was a little bit overstated even before you factor in the bullets. So
I thought Tommy Eichenberg made a couple plays and like they are right. The broadcast was right on the edge of calling him tough Eichenberg. They were right there and they didn't call him tough Eichenberg, but he could play like, right. He's a little bit of a, I think in that room, right. They have all these recruits coming in. It's the Gant, Mitchell, Pope guys who've been waiting forever. And like, I think a lot of the other guys can get caught in the middle a little bit. And I think Tommy Eichenberg, who had the ability to get caught in the middle with the way that he has played this spring, based on the way Al Washington has talked about him, has made the point of like, I'm refusing to get caught in the middle. Don't forget about me. I can help this team. And I think he is maybe in that too deep too. I mean, again, I don't know. I mean, like, it's one of those things, but like, I don't want to underrate Tommy Eichenberg. I mean, you've got to, we talk about this all the time. Like there are times when like, you've got to go. I think if Tommy Eichenberg like didn't show anything this spring, it might've been like very easy to be like, okay, like that's it. Like you're going to be third team this year. And then all these guys are coming next year and I don't know what's going to happen. And he didn't do that. He went. And so now he's in the mix. And so Taraji Mitchell's going to play. We know they're probably, but they're all going to play. I mean, listen, if they play Wisconsin, the Big Ten championship game, right? I mean, they had four linebackers on the field sometimes last year. Mm-hmm. So if somebody can be the Justin Hilliard of this team, like you're the fourth linebacker, and sometimes in certain situations, I mean, Justin Hilliard's like going to get drafted. He played like 15 snaps a game last year, right? So there is a role against certain teams. It's probably not in the playoff, but there is a way that even though it feels like the base defense is only going to have two true linebackers out there, that third linebacker, that fourth linebacker, I think can help this team win a couple games this year based on the opponent.
I think we're going to probably have more to say about the spring game as we go back and look at it again and get a closer look. So I would probably listen to Buckeye Talk this week. I imagine we'll revisit this. And it's now kind of a time of transition, right? So we've seen what we've seen this spring. It's kind of time to see like maybe the chips fall a little bit here with some of these personnel decisions that they're probably going to be making for themselves as we go forward, and something we'll be tracking. Steven will be tracking recruiting as we get into the summer. A lot of NFL draft stuff coming up over the next 2 weeks. We've all got articles about Ohio State players that we are working on and get to work on more now that we're through the spring. But anything else before we sign off today, guys?
No, I think we're good. I do have an interview lined up with the pizza guy for later this week. So that'll be I'll probably wait and run it after the draft, probably be early May. We'll save that. But a pizza guy interview, we will get. Steven, is there a 10-second thing to tell him about the commit who didn't commit for basketball yet? Like, what's up with that? The 7-footer.
Yeah, Ohio State basketball has their own version of JT Tumalau, basically, where he's a five-star with no, and nobody absolutely knows when he's actually going to commit. Efton Reed, the number 23 center in the country. I mean, oh, wow. No, I'm sorry. Number 23 player, number five center in the country. He was supposed to commit on last Thursday, and then his mother just announced that it is postponed. So we'll see what happens there. Maybe the recruiting dead period opening up, maybe giving him a chance to get on campus might have influenced that. But also, obviously, there's always the option for five-star guys like that to go the G League route. So we'll see what happens there. To my knowledge, Ohio State feels like they're in good position with him. Now we'll see if there's actually anything that happens. But then also on a football note, by the time a lot of you guys hear this, Keontae Goodwin, the four-star offensive tackle, top 50 player in the country, will have probably committed to Kentucky as he's predicted to go, who was a longtime Ohio State, you know, favorite, who for, so for the second year in a row, a top 50 tackle who was favorite to Ohio State for a while, ends up at an SEC school.
They'll stay on him forever.
Oh, yeah.
They will recruit him to signing day. It's one guy, if the guy, it's one thing if the guy you're recruiting goes to Bama. If he goes to Kentucky, you recruit him until his pen hits the paper.
That is a situation where I'm pretty sure people around him were telling him that they didn't think the dead period was going to end anytime soon. So he did what he was comfortable with. He's a Kentucky native. So you go to Kentucky. Yeah. This dead period's about to open up. If he gets on campus, I will not be shocked if he's a Buckeye or just anywhere else by the time we get to signing day.
So I think we do. We will have a basketball wrap up at some point, but I think we want to wait for the roster to shake out a little bit before we do that. But that'll be ahead. And as you said, Nathan, we'll do like a full draft preview show, probably on one of the big Wednesdays, probably not this week, but maybe the next week, like the day before the draft. I don't know. We'll see. But still a lot going on, even though spring football's over.
Yeah. So if you haven't tried the text, I think it's still a good time. You can get the 2-week free trial, 614-350-3315. That'll now, at this point, take you pretty much right up through the NFL draft. We'll be texting out intel as it happens with that. But thanks for joining us. For Nathan Baird, or I am Nathan Baird, for Doug Lamreese, for Stephen Means. That was Buckeye Talk.